Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. With me as always, Steven Rommel. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, man. You know, it's it feels like we just did this. We were answering questions from our Monday morning mailbag, and here we are, our Tuesday morning texting. Is that what this is? I don't know exactly what's going on here.
Tuesday but we're transmissions.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Tuesday transmissions are answering more of our listeners' questions because they're excited, as excited as we are about the preseason and looking ahead to the Miami Heat schedule.
Absolutely. So we did a lot of Chris Bosh-related questions because there are a lot of questions about Chris Bosh in that situation. We did that on Monday's mailbag. Today we're looking more forward. We're looking at what's happening on the court. And this first question comes from Jordan Malley. I was curious on your guys' thoughts of Hassan Whiteside's stats in the preseason. He's putting up big numbers in 20 to 25 minutes a game. Do you foresee him putting up 20 to 25 points and 12 to 15 rebounds a game with him playing closer to 36 minutes a game in the regular season? Obviously, Whiteside is playing fewer minutes because it's a preseason. They're trying to spread out the minutes to a 20-man roster. The team will cut its roster down to the final 15 as the regular season comes along. Whiteside will play his regular starter minutes, which will probably be around anywhere between 30 and 36 minutes, I imagine.
Yeah.
Maybe not 36. That seems a little high for Whiteside. He typically doesn't play that many minutes, but somewhere around that, I get the point. Whiteside's been really good in this preseason, and I think what stands out to me the most is the fast starts that he's getting off to. He's really establishing his dominance down low early and often. I mean, the first game, I think he scored, I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, but it was like 15 points and, I don't know, in the first 11 minutes he scored like basically filled out his box score.
Yeah.
And to me, that's the big thing. When I'm watching these preseason games, that's what I'm looking for, because if the Heat are going to win games this year, Whiteside's going to need to do just that, establish a tone and a dominance down low early and set the pace for the game that way, and that's exactly what he's been doing. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm remembering when he was the starter before he was suspended last season and it was coming off the bench. Remember, we always used to talk about the fact that he kind of seemed to be saving himself over the first half, and then he kind of got engaged in the third half, and that's when he would really, not necessarily inflate the numbers, you know, but he would have more of an impact on the game, and that doesn't seem to be the case. Again, through the preseason, so take it for what it's worth, but, you know, it seems like he's at least trying to have more of an impact early on, and that's certainly a factor, I think, moving forward for Miami. As if they have any chance at success, they're going to need him and Dragic particularly to have a huge influence and an impact, an immediate one on the game. And that starts off with getting to the rim and doing everything that they've done. And I think the numbers, 20 to 25 points, 12 to 15 rebounds, I think that's right in his wheelhouse, to be honest with you. I think when you look at the other players until Richardson comes back, even if Tyler Johnson is playing, even if Waiters is playing, whoever those might be, those are guys that are going to be secondary roles. They're going to be there, counted on, to fill the box score in other ways. Even a guy like Justice Winslow, who you expect to have more of a role on offense, I think you and I have predicted that he'll be more of a facilitator, not necessarily a scorer.
We're already seeing him throw nice lobs up to Whiteside and everything like that
right,
in the preseason. So
right, yeah.
It seems like this team's really built around getting Whiteside the ball. We've seen Dragic get on the same page with Whiteside. That's the other thing. With Dwayne Wade gone, we were wondering who's going to be the Whiteside whisperer, who's going to get him involved early and get him his touches. It seems like this team, really through training camp, I think, because that's really when this team started working together, there must have been an emphasis on that, because Dragic and Winslow have done, and Deion Waiters have done a really good job getting him the ball, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's their most reliable scorer. I mean, he's a guy who doesn't rely on getting a shot from 10-15 or further away from the basket. He works strictly within the proximity of the painted area, and that's where his specialty is. That's where his athleticism and his length can be maximized. So it's easier for him to score than anybody else, and that's just the reality of it. We talked about it before that. It seems like he's much more dominant than opposing centers. And, if that's the case, then why not go to him as often as possible? And I know it's not necessarily a throwback to the Shaquille O'Neal era where you're just going to lob him the ball constantly and hope, that he'll continue to score at will. But we're going to see a pretty good mix and match, I think. And it's effective for him to go towards the paint and concentrate there and do everything else. And that frees up everything else. As we saw during the O'Neal era here, it was, four shooters surrounding him, or a guy like Wade who would cut to the hoop if they double or triple team Shaq. So it's certainly going to be an advantage for Miami. And I can't help but also bring up the fact that it is preseason. Like he faced Marcin Gortat in Washington, but he only faced Gorgui Dieng, not Karl Anthony Towns in Minnesota. Against Brooklyn, he faced Justin Hamilton. Not exactly strong opposing centers. And Pau Gasol has not been a strong defensive player for a long time now. So even the blowout victory.
I hear you, and I agree with what you're saying. But it's not like Whiteside came out of nowhere and is doing this in the preseason. Like he's put up great stats in the past against big time competition, and he played well in the playoffs last year, which was huge before he got injured. And I think what we're seeing from him is that there is from the whole team in general, there's been a decision that they're going to get Whiteside involved early, and Whiteside is showing a willingness to be dominant early, and I think that there's a focus there. To me, that's what is the most impressive thing this preseason. Also, to your point, they're going to just throw lobs up to him and stuff like that, but they've also been giving him the ball in the post sometimes and seeing what he'll do with it. We've seen a couple of times where he'll try to make a post move or two, and sometimes it's ugly, sometimes it's not as ugly, but it's never exactly pretty. We've seen him give handoffs to guys like Tyler Johnson, who's cutting down under the rim on like a backdoor cut or something like that. So there's definitely more than ever going to be a focus on playing through Whiteside. If he's putting up 20 to 25 points and 12 to 15 rebounds a game, We wondered if he could make an All-Star game. Those are All-Star game numbers. There's no doubt he'll make the All-Star game if those are his numbers.
Without a doubt. But I'm more curious to see what'll happen when he faces a center particularly known for their defensive acumen. I mean, you look at, who's in the Southeastern Division. He's got to face Dwight Howard. Nikola Vucevic in Orlando, that's not much of a threat. And, Cody Zeller has given Whiteside some problems in the past.
Bismack Biyombo's in Orlando now.
Yeah. There's some concerns there. So I'm curious to see what happens. But, those are centers that could probably be a little bit more effective than what we've seen here. But you're right, though. I acknowledge what you're saying, that, it's not like he's just all of a sudden scoring at an incredible rate that we hadn't seen in the past. But, what are his per 36 numbers for the preseason, right? Is he averaging like 30 points per game? Yeah, that doesn't seem sustainable. Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
I do wonder how many 30-point games he'll get this year. Maybe a handful.
Have we had any since Shaq? I mean, have we had any? Well, I guess Chris Bosh has probably had a 30-point game.
Yeah, but from like a, yeah. All right, next question comes from Lee Seaton. During the offseason practice sessions, does Alonzo Mourning work with Whiteside on his game and development? In my mind, tend to think of Whiteside as an Alonzo Mourning type player, a powerful offensive player who presents a huge defensive presence. Do you see any of the same similarities between the two? So a two-parter. From what we understand, Alonzo Mourning doesn't necessarily coach Whiteside on the court during practices, but he talks with him. He has a mentor type relationship, right?
Yeah, I think in Mourning's role capacity, although we, tend to think of it as mostly a superficial title, I mean, he is president or vice president of player development. So he is really just mostly an experienced mentoring voice there along the same lines as what Udonis Haslem provides on the court. So we'd heard during Whiteside's more troubling moments during the first year and a half of his tenure in Miami that occasionally he would get counsel from morning, and it was a guy who would kind of get in his ear and tell him, look, I understand you're getting hacked up there. I know what it's like to lose your cool and to get beat up and not get that foul call, but you can't lose your temper and things of that sort. So, I mean, clearly he has had some influence on Whiteside in telling him to mature and handle the responsibility of being the center of this team. But I don't think yet he necessarily goes onto the floor and in the middle of practice and coaches him. I think that's, you know, up to Spoelstra right now. They've also got a strong veteran presence who played the center position throughout his NBA career, and Juwan Howard, who is actually on the coaching staff. So right. I think if they were going to rely on anybody to coach him up on the floor, it would probably be Howard more than anybody else.
Right,
but, you know, it's good to
and
have
seen,
a guy.
And we've seen Juwan. We know that he does coach.
Absolutely.
He does take a focus on Whiteside, while sure. guys like Chris Quinn help, you know, Goran Dragic and the right. guards and the shooters and stuff. So the coaching staff is designed in that way where they recently brought on a shooting coach to focus with guys like Winslow and other guys that need to develop their shooting, Derek Williams. So there's almost like there's a separation among the coaching staff, like where they divvy up certain players and positions. Okay, Juwan, go handle the low post guys. Chris Quinn will handle the guards, and whoever needs some help shooting will go with our new shooting coach. So the second part of that question is, are there similarities between the two? The obvious similarity is that they both block a lot of shots.
Right.
That's the obvious one. But as far as the way, I don't really see them as similar players, to be honest. I mean, they weren't the most versatile. Like, Alonzo Mourning was not the most versatile offensive player, but I think he was certainly more versatile than Whiteside. And the reason I say he wasn't the most versatile was because he wasn't Chris Bosh or Karl-Anthony Towns or Kevin Garnett taking shots from three-point range. You know what I mean? Like, he wasn't right. stretching the floor, but he had more post moves. He was a better passer. And that, to me, the Heat often would just, and maybe this speaks more of the era, but they would just throw the ball to Alonzo Mourning, and he could make things happen, whether he was posting up, maybe putting a move on the defense, or passing to another player and kicking out. You can't do that with Whiteside. They might, right now, maybe he develops that, and that's what they're hoping that he develops, but right now you can't just throw the ball to Whiteside and hope that the whole offense succeeds around him. If you throw the ball to Whiteside might succeed, but the offense isn't necessarily going to thrive with when Whiteside's got the ball in the post. Does that make sense? Like, he's not going to get other guys involved. I think Alonzo did a little bit more of that. Whiteside's more like a DeAndre Jordan type, where you're not really going to design plays for him, but you're going to get him on the pick and rolls, you're going to get him on the lobs, he's going to have some putbacks, he's going to make some wow athletic plays. I didn't see that, not saying that Mourning didn't do that, but that's not exactly what he relied on, right?
No, yeah, and I think a lot of that is the era, the competition that he's played, and the disparity between the two players. I mean, I remember Mourning collecting the ball on the baseline, you know, 18 feet away from the basket, and kind of jab-stepping his way towards, you know, the hoop. He could get away from a defender and finish off with a dunk, or maybe put up a nice right-handed hook shot there if he was working off the left baseline. I mean, there was just so much more in his offensive repertoire that we haven't seen up to this point from Whiteside. That's not to say that he can't do it, but at this point, we haven't seen it from him. He's not as polished. Maybe he will develop it. I mean, we've seen, you know, him change his free throw motions in the middle of a season and things of that along that line. So maybe he's going to be engaged and recognize that he has to change and upgrade his offensive repertoire. And if that's the case, maybe we'll see some of that being implemented.
Yeah, we've seen flashes of that stuff. Like, he'll dribble and put a spin move on somebody like out of nowhere randomly.
Right.
Or he'll hit an 18-foot jumper or something like that. We've seen flashes of that versatility, but nothing's ever been consistent. And I think, you know, Alonzo Mourning was obviously much more consistent. That, and now I'm thinking, like, you know, the obvious comparison with Whiteside is DeAndre Jordan, who's, you know, in the same era. But would you, like, I'm trying to think of the player right now that you would maybe compare to Alonzo Mourning back then. I'm thinking, like, almost peak Marc Gasol or...
No, not the passes.
I'm putting you on the spot here, but I'm trying to think of somebody that you would compare to, like Alonzo Mourning, that's around right now.
Maybe a more athletic Gortat, actually, now that I think about it. You know, a guy who can finish, he can kind of shoot around the rim. But it just, Mourning was just so impressive, so much stronger and physical.
Like a more disciplined DeMarcus Cousins.
Yeah, but Boogie's got such range.
He started shooting threes last year.
Yeah, we did see Mourning capable of hitting the occasional three-pointer, maybe even as far out as 20-footers that he would feel comfortable popping and taking, but and making, moreover. But I just don't know that that was something that was the strength of his game. Again, that's the changing in era, too, where, yeah, you know, three-point shots were de-emphasized. I can't recall the number of times I heard commentators back then saying, you know, a two-point shot is much better, or much the much better shot than a three-pointer, like, you know, negatively casting aspersions on three-pointers when the game has changed so much to the point where it's the exact opposite. And now the spread pick and roll is incorporated, and that's why you have a lot more centers who emphasize rim running along the lines of Jordan and Whiteside. So it's just a completely different style of play. It's a great question, and, you know, certainly fun to entertain during the preseason, things along those lines. But I just don't know that there's much of a comparison anymore between players of this era and that one, simply because of, you know, there's just so much going on there. I mean, maybe, I don't know, maybe Ronnie Cicely, another Heat center, a guy who worked around the rim, the spin doctor. I mean, he wasn't much of a shooter from outside. Maybe he was a guy who kind of worked closer to the rim, you know, was a very good rebounder, not much of a shot blocker, but, you know, maybe that's somebody that we could compare to. It's interesting. I wonder if you take like a, if you take a scrub from that era, you know, somebody who was like a backup maybe, and bring him into this era, I wonder if they'd be able to, you know, thrive here, because that was the era of the center. You had guys like O'Neal and Elijah One, and even Rick Smits in Indiana.
Yeah. You know, I was wondering, what if you took Alonzo Mourning and put him in this era? Would he start shooting threes? Would he be asked to play more away from the rim? I wonder if he would start stretching his game out.
He'd be a small ball center and power forward, right? Isn't that what they'd use him as?
Yeah. Might be interesting.
Interesting.
All right, well, this is our next question. This is from Sam. Sam, we didn't get a last name from you, so it's just Sam. I've been theorizing all summer that Pat Riley will somehow get DeMarcus Cousins from Vlade Divac, the general manager of the Kings, using us on Whiteside, potentially in a blockbuster trade involving Goran Dragic, Rudy Gay, Ben McLemore, and others in the mix. What do you think?
Wow.
So, first of all, if there's a trade between the Heat and the Kings, I'm not sure we can call it blockbuster. But if it's involving DeMarcus Cousins, I suppose so. I guess that's the word. But it's interesting. We've talked about some trades with the Kings. There's been Zach Lowe reported last week that there had been, quote-unquote, vague trade talks between the two teams. I don't know what that means. Well, I do know what it means. It just means there's been maybe a couple phone calls here and there. Maybe asking, hey, what are you looking for in return for Rudy Gay? That might be the extent of the conversation, right? Like, what's your value of Rudy Gay? What's it going to take?
It's interesting, right? I mean,
Whiteside.
As much as I like, I think to me the one I'd be most disappointed including in that trade, unless they, you know, ship a guy like Richardson or Winslow with a high upside. To me, and I think you probably have to include, I don't know. I don't know how the numbers would work, to be honest with you. I guess it would have to be Dragic, Whiteside, and maybe Richardson if you want to get a guy like McLemore included in there. And it's just like, basically you're saying,
scrub now. I don't know. I don't.
Well, but you know, how much of that is the dysfunction of Sacramento?
Probably but that's his, you know, that hurts his market value.
Well, exactly. And so that's why they might be more willing to trade him. And maybe if you ship him, if you're pulling the plug on both teams, you're saying this season we're kind of done. We're not really going to, you know, make any moves in the postseason or anything like that. You know, you want to see if you can bring in that abundance of talent and kind of hope that they mesh here. Again, maybe Rudy Gay's contract comes off the books at the end of the season. The concern there, though, is DeMarcus Cousins, who's an impending free agent, I think, at the end of the 2018 season.
Right.
So that you don't want to make a move and risk him leaving there when you've just locked up Whiteside for such a huge amount of money and everything
else. Well, that's exactly, I think, why this trade makes sense for Sacramento, is right, because they're not sure that Cousins is going to stay. And that's what the Heat's leverage is. It's like, look, what we know and we're understanding that Whiteside's not as good as DeMarcus Cousins. We admit that. But he is locked into this contract that by next summer is going to look very good when the cap spikes even higher.
Right.
You've got Whiteside locked up for 4 years. You don't have to deal with DeMarcus Cousins becoming a free agent after next year, possibly demanding a trade in the middle of the season next year. You know, here's your chance to make that deal. So you trade Whiteside for Cousins, and that's the leverage that the Heat have, is basically getting a better player on a shorter-term contract for Whiteside, who's already locked into a longer-term deal. If the Heat really want to make a move. I don't think there's any doubt that DeMarcus Cousins is a much better player than Whiteside.
And I'm actually pretty sure that there are some people who think Whiteside's better just because of his defensive impact. I know that Boogie's better. I think the problem is that people resent his attitude, that he always is scowling and angry, and they think he's a jerk and a malcontent and all this crap, you know, all this BS narrative that surrounds him all the time. But I think a lot of that is, yeah, maybe he is a surly guy. He's also a 7-footer who's been kind of, you know, tossed around by this dysfunctional ass team that has had one coach after the other who hasn't been able to connect with him. The first guy they did, Michael Malone, the second that Boogie went down with an injury, you know, they fired his ass. So to be honest with you, there's no reason why he would trust that organization and to want to play at a high level. They're not going to go anywhere. And he's known it for the past 6 years. So, I mean, maybe the reputation of Miami hasn't taken such a big hit where he'd come to Miami and be like, oh, this is a fresh new start. I cannot wait to play for this organization. They got Alonzo here. They already helped Whiteside take it to the next level. You know, they've had Shaquille O'Neal here. They've had, you know, Mourning. They've had everybody here. This is a team that can really help me become a new type of player and everything else. So, I mean, I'd be pretty happy with a Boogie trade, to be honest with you.
I think the deal, if it was going to be a blockbuster, I'm looking at the how the cap space would work, the salaries would work. It would have to be Whiteside and Goran Dragic if it's going to be that Dragic deal included.
Okay.
Whiteside and Dragic for DeMarcus Cousins, Rudy Gay, Darren Collison, and Ben McLemore. That's how the contracts would work.
DeMarcus Cousins, Rudy Gay, McLemore, and who else?
Darren Collison.
Oh. If it was just Whiteside and Dragic?
Yeah.
I don't know that we'd want Collison on here, right? I mean,
no, but he's, you know, if you're getting rid of Dragic, you're probably looking for another point guard to replace him with.
Well, I mean, we have Deion Waiters already here.
We have Waiters. I mean, Josh Richardson, Tyler Johnson, they could all play a point, but, well, that's how the contracts were. Let's say we get rid of Darren Collison. You'd have to, I don't know. That's really the only contract that works. You need, like, a somewhere in that range of his deal. That's really the, and it makes sense. And he's on a one-year deal anyway. So you bring him
in for a year. So if you take Backlemore out of the equation and it's just Whiteside and Dragic for Cousins and Gay, do the numbers work then?
You're still about $3 million or $4 million short. I mean, you could get. I don't know if the Heat would be able to pry Willie Cauley-Stein in that deal.
No, I don't think they're willing to move him. I think they're high on him at Sacramento from everything I've heard.
McLemore is really the deal that works there to make the salaries match.
Mm, interesting.
McLemore wouldn't be bad either. I mean, he's got for 1 year. He's a 1 year deal, right? You bring him in, say, okay, let's see if we can figure this guy out. I mean, this is a guy that drew comparisons to Ray Allen coming out of Kansas.
Right, isn't he a restricted free agent at the end of this year?
Yeah, so you have an option then to just let him walk, and you get you know a season or a half season, depending on when this hypothetical trade would take place, to say, all right, let's see what we can make out of this guy, and if we don't see a light at the end of the tunnel with him, we'll let him walk.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say they're going to make the trade.
All right, it's done.
That's it. It's going to happen. I think I'm predicting a trade with the Sacramento Kings.
And you get Rudy Gay, who we already talked about. I mean, he could opt out at the end of this year, and then all of a sudden you're left, you know, Rudy Gay's gone, Darren Collison's gone, and maybe Ben McLemore leaves. So then basically you've traded Whiteside and Dragic for DeMarcus Cousins. Because that's really what that trade is. It's Whiteside and Dragic for DeMarcus Cousins, and okay, let's see what we can do with Ben McLemore. That's really what that trade is.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure I like that. I think if I'm the Heat, I would ask for another young player, maybe a Scal Labissiere in return or something like that. Or even, you know, a Willie Cauley-Stein or Georges Papagiannis, who they took the 13th pick. I would ask one of those guys on a rookie scale long-term deal in return, because the Heat are getting rid of an all-star level center and an all-star level point guard. You know, guys that are that type of player for one player on a short-term deal. I would probably ask for a long-term deal, a rookie scale young player in return in that deal somewhere.
Yeah, and I'll add this caveat, by the way, that I'm predicting that they make this trade simply because I know I'm jinxing it if it happens, so they're not going to do it anyway.
Perfect. But it's an interesting deal, right? Like, If the Heat clear house and build around a player, DeMarcus Cousins is the type of player that you could build around. He's only 27, I think.
Yeah,
26. He's 26. He'll turn 27 in next August, so very young still.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing. Is like the career narrative around Boogie is so interesting because it's just like, you know, what are you getting in him? And he was, relatively low lottery pick despite this incredible talent. And there's so much he can do. He can score at the rim. He can shoot from outside. He's not engaged defensively. But, you know, again, part of that is the team and the coaching and everything else that's gone into it. And so it's the attitude versus the talent and what are you getting in return and things of that sort. And, I mean, I want him to pull it together, whether it's Sacramento or here or elsewhere. I want him to be able to be recognized for just his ability on the floor. But that's, you know, that seems unlikely at this point. So we'll have to wait and see what happens. But yeah, it's been an interesting career for him. And yeah,
I'll be at the Kings game tonight. I'll ask him.
Yes. Yeah, ask him. I'm sure that'll go over really well. Ask him, how would you feel about a trade to the Miami Heat?
It'd be great if he actually answered that. All right. Well, those are all the mailbag questions we have. Those are good questions. Well,
we did have one more. I don't know if you want to include it, about the trade for Scal.
Yeah, so I kind of tried to throw that in there. That was from George Coles. He said, what about a Dragic and a pick or someone else to the Kings for Scal Abessier? He's a rookie power forward center type that the Kings drafted, I think, at the 28th pick. Right. And from Haiti, so... George did mention that, you know, there's a connection with South Florida and Haiti there. And then, you know, one of those modern type of centers. He played at Kentucky. A lot of good big men have come out of Kentucky recently. I think Dragic and a pick or someone else is a vast overpay for the 28th pick in the draft.
Yeah, I agree there. I mean, like you mentioned, I think he'd have to be a throw-in for... the deal for much bigger pieces, you know, Cousins and Rudy Gay and others.
Yeah, I mean, I could see Dragic for Rudy Gay and Scal. That makes sense. The salaries almost line up.
Yeah, and I mentioned to you before we started about as much as the Haitian connection makes sense on a lot of levels, I know that he had the opportunity to bring in Samuel D'Alembert on the cheap years ago, specifically when they needed a rim protector. I want to say it was even during the Big Three era. And they needed a rim protector at that point, and he had been waived, I want to say, by the Mavericks, and they didn't do it. They chose not to. So it was, you know, they passed him up already, despite the fact that he had connections here to South Florida. He even specifically had connections to friend of the program, Eric Reed. You know, who's been active in the Haitian community himself. So I think there was already the workings of a good deal in place there. And unfortunately, it wasn't something that they were interested in. So
it's more of a Marlins move. That's something the Miami Marlins.
Yes. Do. Good point. Yeah. Yeah. Like, let's appeal to this background or this ethnic group in our community here.
It's a basketball town, right? Like, they don't need to pull those novelties, you know, not to say that it's not appreciated when the Marlins do it, but they are also struggling to sell out that arena, which is what I call that park. I call that an arena because that's what that is. It's got a roof.
It's excellent. Have you been to Marlins Park?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Did you enjoy it or you didn't like it?
No, I didn't like it.
Really?
It felt too superficial, man. Like, I don't know. Maybe I got to get another shot.
Were you there when the stadium was open, though? The roof was open?
No, I was there when they closed it, like, the whole first year.
I've been there when it's been open. It's spectacular. It's a beautiful day, and yeah, everything's great. So, I mean, I think it's a necessity in South Florida. I, to be honest with you, I'd rather be in an arena like that than sitting out in the pouring rain and watch baseball for 4 hours.
That's true. I mean, whatever. I boycotted the Marlins a while ago.
Oh, sure, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, when they prove it to me, I'll buy in again.
Okay.
All right, well, now that we're done with our Marlins talk, I think that's all we have for today. Whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, thank you for listening. You can get in touch with the show on Twitter, @LockedOnHeat, or by email, where you can send us mailbag questions, leave us comments, or inquire about advertising if that floats your boat. That's LockedOnHeat @gmail.com. Thanks, David.
You got it, Wes.
We'll catch you next time.